I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello, and welcome to the Don't Know Her podcast. I'm Michael.
And I'm Scott.
And we are here, after a little break, to talk about yet another actor who we want to celebrate. And this time, we're talking about someone who you, Scott, have been gagging to talk about. I feel like she was the first person you might have brought up.
She was one of the first, yes. Yeah. But because she also felt different from many we've done.
And, well, we'll get into that, but, yeah, I've always felt really bad because for whatever reason I've shot her down. for some decent reasons, like she's not making films currently, she doesn't seem to be interested in making films, but I'm really glad that we got here finally in our 62nd episode. And tell us now, Scott, who is this darling of cinema that you've been so eager to talk about?
Of course, it is the eternally beautiful Eva, I believe is how it said, Mendes.
Yeah, I have a godchild and cousin called Eva, so I find it very hard. But apologies for my ignorance. So Eva, I'm going to...
I think it is. Say. I would naturally say Eva too, and I think I always do. So I believe there might be both versions used throughout.
Yeah, the more relaxed we get, the more Eva will appear.
More Evas.
Eva or Ava, wonderfully charismatic screen presence that sadly hasn't worked in a very long time on film, sorry, has done an awful lot of work off film, but of course our focus is film.
Yes, exactly that. No, she's been off of the film scene for the best part of a decade now. I think that is correct. And that's why it was one that came up when we first started talking about the podcast and who we should do. And she both felt like a perfect fit and an unusual fit. And I remember us talking back when we started with, you know, Celia Imrie and wonderful performers like and me then being like, Eva Mendes. And there was always,
and I was like, no, only old British dames and Joan Cusack.
Well, yes. And how could I argue with that? So there we went down that merry path. But there was always something that felt like we have seen this performer do great things, but truly, truly not often enough. And clearly because she's A, been typecast and B, not been given the opportunity she would like to have as a performer. And I think that sort of clouded things, but now that we've moved along and done quite a variety of performers, she does feel perfect, and she feels like a perfect topic because, quite literally, she identifies that her path is not where she would like it to be. So it is quite clearly, we want more from her. I'm sure many people want more from her. Eva Mendes wants more from her. But it is because of the situation she's been put in where she has, as a mother over the past 10 years, decided to focus on that absolutely fairly, is tempted to come back to acting, but does want it to be for the right thing and not for anything. So it's an interesting point to talk about her, because it'd be fascinating if we now see within the next couple of years, she comes along with something exciting. And I would therefore hope that if we do get something from her in the next few years, that it is something really interesting and therefore fulfilling that thing that she has specified that she wants for herself.
Oh, yeah, that would be a lovely story. A definitely Oscar winning story.
Yeah.
Well, we had it with Brendan Fraser in a similar sort of way, I guess. But he's not married to Ryan Gosling, so it's maybe the fairy tale like rags to riches doesn't work if you're married to literally one of the most charming men in film.
Yes, but Ken, at this moment in time as we record, still very, very much in the public eye as Ken.
So when would you first got to know who Eva Mendes was?
So it was certainly, I'm often unsure about the answer to this, but for me it was certainly Too Fast, Too Furious. Against type, I understand. But I watched that film and the initial sort of three entries in that series a huge amount when I was of a certain age. And the one I watched the most by a significant margin was Too Fast, Too Furious, which is the second entry, if it's not clear from the twos.
Well, it could be four or 22.
You're absolutely right. It is unclear, so it is important I clarify. It is the second entry in the Fast franchise, All About Family, that franchise. And Eva Mendes is in that film as a sort of undercover operative who's, you know, working with an Argentinian crime lord type person and brings the streetcar racers into the situation and being incredibly sexy throughout. And I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to bring up the fact that she's an incredibly attractive woman and a lot of what people will reflect on for Eva, and because her career has been designed in a certain way, is that she's beautiful and it is hard to avoid. But she is, you know what, she does get quite a bit to do in that film, I will say. So she does make her mark. If she had been in it really briefly, as we have seen in many other things, as the girlfriend of a character, and that be it, I may not have remembered her. Mm-hmm. However, she gets to have a lot of fun in that film. She is sort of at the forefront alongside the leads, pushing things on their fast journey. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I would have always known who she was from that point. So Too Fast was my entry. What about you?
I similarly would have watched Too Fast, Too Furious when it came out, but I couldn't. That's not where she had any imprint on me. I think those films, like, I just remember, I don't remember much. Maybe the first one I watched more than once, so I remember that better. I was too focused on Vin Diesel's arms to be noticing anything else.
It happens to the best of us.
It's hard. But
they are hard. Very well, hard, I'm sure.
That'd be very disappointing if they weren't. But I would have known of her basically all the time, and I can't remember when I would have clocked this is someone I'm excited about. I think that would have taken me a while, to be totally honest. So I definitely would have seen the women. I definitely would have seen I feel like I saw the other guys even, and I nothing really clicked in terms of Eva Mendes until Holy Motors and The Place Beyond the Pines, and particularly The Place Beyond the Pines, where she is the real heart and the real catalyst to the story unfolding. And I think we'll get into it, but it's a really small part role that she's given there, but she does so much with it.
Correct, yes.
So yeah, I she's an interesting one from my perspective. Like, looking back, she's very much a product, as you say, like most of the parts that she's been given, even in ones where she's, you know, talking about it being much more credible, like something like Training Day, she essentially is there as not just an attractive woman, but an incredibly like sexy beyond belief woman. So it's interesting because I think she's way better than being typecast in those roles, and it's really frustrating. And just reflecting on some of the opportunities now, like the women, what a role that could have been for her. What an opportunity, the updating this 1930s film about, you know, a group of women basically interacting without any men. Like, that could have been really fun, and she's playing the Joan Crawford part. And she even gets some of the lines, but it doesn't work. So I just feel like she's someone who's like, either it's stuck in this boys' club, and then when she tries to move out of it, it just doesn't, like, light up the screen in the way that you might imagine.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. It's really interesting to reflect on what her career could have or would have been had she have taken a different path or chosen differently or whatever it might be. I do also hope that there would have been a lot of great stuff, because we were seeing it. We were seeing that happening. Interesting, exciting filmmakers working with Ava. And then, you know, she took her break and essentially is still on that break, if it is indeed a break. But I do like to think about what might have filled the gaps, or therefore what could be waiting should that door reopen at her own choice.
Yeah, and she really deserves a great part to lure her back in. It would be heartbreaking to see her in, like, Fast and the Furious. I don't know, are they on 11 now? Are they just done 10, right?
Oh,
I can't keep up. 15, but anyway, 16. You know, and she's just there as, like, look, I'm still sexy, and I, you know, whatever. I'm now a MILF, or I don't know what the... Or even if they're doing American Pie reboot and they've casting her as the MILF, you know, like, that's the sort of stuff I assume she's actively said she doesn't want to do those parts, but I really hope people aren't wasting her time giving her those scripts. Give her something good.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm with you. I agree.
Hitch 2. It's right there.
It sure is. No, I don't think so. I think that's been slapped out of the collections of existence.
We'll get to Hitch.
We'll get there, of course. We cannot.
And one thing I will say just before we get into the career and life, film life of Ava Mendes, I think there's something really old-fashioned about her star quality. Like, I think there's something really effortless about her. She just appears on screen and you're like, wow, like, you are a star. Yeah. And I don't know if many people have that naturally. Like, even if I think of my favorite actors, you know, Nicole Kim and Julianne Moore, I feel like they have to work harder than Ava Mendes does to just light up the screen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's no denying that wattage that does come from her without anything other than being there.
But we've not seen Ava have a prosthetic nose as Virginia Woolf, so maybe the wattage would come down.
Well, that's true. What would Ava do with the Virginia Woolf? I would like to see it.
She's dying in this town, Leonard.
Oh, she definitely would be dying in this town.
She'd be dying because all those creepy British men, like, surrounding that Richmond house.
She'd be hunted down. It would be awful. I don't want that for her. No.
Anyway, as it is, Nicole got that part, and the rest is history.
Truly.
So bring us up to speed on the life and times of Ava's film life.
Love and life, let's go with it. Ava, where has she been? What's she at? What's going on? So, Ava de la Caridad Mendes, aka Eva Mendes, was born on March 5th, 1974, in Miami, Florida, to Cuban parents. Following the divorce of her parents, though, Ava was brought up in Los Angeles by her mother. Her mother, very interestingly, I thought, just given the trajectory of her career, worked at the iconic Man's Chinese Theatre in Los Angeles, probably the most iconic cinema in the world, for at least a period of time. So I thought that was a fun little addition there. Why wouldn't Ava be drawn to the big screen? She would go to high school also in LA and would study marketing at California State University, but would leave college to pursue acting under the acting coach Ivana Chubbuck. Eva's career, she's got an amazing career, but she also has an amazing career.
Well, I think and that carer.
Her carer took off early too. She was fending for herself from the off. But when that happened, she was spotted in a friend's portfolio by a talent agent. And in 1996, she starred in a video for the Pet Shop Boys' Se a Vida E, That's the Way Life Is. And that wouldn't stop with the music videos. In 1997, she would also appear in Aerosmith's video for Hole in My Soul and Will Smith's Miami, which I believe her vocals, her very amazing vocals, also appear in.
Yeah.
Music videos, she's done a few of those now. Where are we going next, Ava? She is going on to the big time. She stars in direct-to-video horror film Children of the Corn 5, Fields of Terror. I'm sure horrifying that film is. Yeah, I'm we didn't not watch. Sure. I have not watched this one either. But after that, and I think following some disappointment in her performance, she held herself to high standards. Obviously, Children of the Corn 5 wasn't bringing what she thought she could. This is when she would really start to go on to work with Ivana Chabot and started developing her acting. And from that, we see more roles come along. So she then took the role of a bridesmaid in the but in the case of this film, I think just one, in Night at the Roxbury. Mm-hmm. And I should say both of these films actually were released in 98. When they were filmed, who knows? But they were released then, so... just for sense of time. She then starred alongside Scarlett Johansson in My Brother the Pig in 99. And then really feeling those horror sequels in 2000, she was in Urban Legend, Final Cut.
Well, let's talk the Pig movie. So I watched clips of this because I find it interesting because I think Eva Mendes and Scarlett Johansson have similar... has similarities in you know, Scarlett Johansson talked about just being cast as a sexy, mysterious woman.
Mm.
Now, I recommend people go out and find clips because the film is about Scarlett Johansson, and she has two brothers, and Eva Mendes is their childminder, and Scarlett Johansson somehow changes one of the brothers into a pig, and then Eva Mendes, before the parents find out, has to bring them across the border to Mexico.
Oh my God.
To change the pig back through witchcraft. Because
that's what you find in Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Kathy, your mom and dad went to go find traveler's checks, and, well, I have to go run to Kinko's and make all these copies. So I was wondering if you could please, please watch George and Freud for me. I would really appreciate it.
Fine. Great. Thanks.
It did really didn't do well in cinemas. No, it didn't.
Oh, okay. Well,
but a reboot, rebooted. Like, I think there's something in it. Imagine turning your sibling into a pig.
And I think Scarlett's hunting for work. I mean, she's working with Kristen Scott Thomas, so she must be desperate.
Hey, you back off, Dame Kristen Scott Thomas.
Excuse me. That was a joke. Anyway, where did she go after all of that stuff? Well, in 2001, she starred in a Steven Seagal film, so fucking hell. Choices, or lack thereof, were made. This would be his action thriller, Exit Wounds. And it was very financially successful. I think a lot of his films tend to be, especially at that point in time. It wasn't the moment that she would have been hoping and searching for, I'm sure. And to make matters worse, her voice was found by herself to have been dubbed in the edit. And I'm going with Wikipedia, what it says here. So we'll take that with a large pinch of salt. But allegedly, a producer told her that she did not sound intelligent enough, which is yuck and rude and not okay.
No.
So 'twas not the moment. However... 2001 was an important year, and Eva recognises this herself. Mm. She got a role in 2001's Training Day, where she plays the mistress of Denzel Washington's corrupt cop, which was also his Oscar-winning lead turn. Lest we forget, he already had bagged the supporting one. Here comes the lead one. And she describes this role as pivotal in her career, and it's something that kept her motivated to stick with acting because she was finding these things to be a little nothingy for her and described them herself as terrible, cheesy, horrible movies. Eek!
New guy, Jake.
Hi.
Nice to meet you. Come in. Welcome to my house.
Yeah, hook him up some food.
Okay.
You know, take care of.
Yeah, of course.
Huh?
All right. How are you?
Good.
And do you know what? It's funny. I had not seen Training Day before preparing for this, and you're the same, right?
Yes, exactly. Me neither.
So after reading Eva Mendes talk about the film and the role like that, I was like, whoa, like, I didn't even know she was in it. This is going to be groundbreaking. And now, I really, really enjoyed the movie. I really enjoy Ethan Hawke playing this, you know, the character of, you know, I'm going to go for my first day with Denzel Washington to find out what it's like to work on the streets like this, and then discover Denzel Washington is very corrupt and has his own rules and whatnot. But Eva Mendes essentially is kind of a catalyst, and now she has a son who is the real, like, damsel in distress, but she's kind of part of, you know, tied up in that too, and she's solid, like, it's good, but honestly, I was expecting something really, really, truly terrific. I don't know why, like, one big scene or one big moment
for her. Yeah, sure.
Oh yeah, the film itself I really, really enjoyed, but I just, you know, when someone describes, like, this is what motivated me to keep going. But maybe being that close to success and that close to a film that's being that well regarded after being in a pig movie with Scarlett Johansson and Steven Seagal and all, maybe that's enough.
Yeah, but I think that's fair. And I think you do see it again, and this is no slight on her choices or anything like that, but I think these moments where it really does take off and there is more kind of credit given and the film is getting attention for whatever reason, be that Oscars, Cannes, wherever it's happening, I think she does thrive on that and values that it is having an impact, and she's a part of that. And I too was expecting something similar. We don't necessarily get that. She is good, but yeah, she ultimately is playing a mistress. And although I will say it's nice to see her turn up, because Denzel Washington is quite scary in this, and you understand why the awards attention came his way, because it's a big performance, it's very present, and you do feel unnerved by him. But then when you encounter this woman he's spending a lot of time with, she's incredibly maternal in that first instance that you meet her, and warm and lovely, and it's like, oh yes, okay, Ava's here, nice. And she does get moments, but ultimately it does feel like she is a small cog, unfortunately, in a larger.
And there's so many fascinating, like, performances that for bit parts and everything. Yeah, I'm really glad I watched it. And you know what? I'm glad that it really inspired Ava to continue.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's definitely a good thing. So let's see what she continued on to. So in 2002, she stars in All About the Benjamins, a crime comedy. There are trends along the way, we shall say, at this point. You shall notice them. And this one was alongside Ice Cube, and she plays the girlfriend of a criminal con artist. So very quickly, trends are forming. And then 2003, very busy year for Ava. She reteams with Mr. Denzel Washington in Out of Time, playing his wife. Surprise, surprise. Another trend. And then also that year, she has the comedy Stuck on You alongside Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear, where she plays an aspiring actress. What else did she have going on in this very busy year? The Western action film Once Upon a Time in Mexico, alongside Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek. So it's getting real starry at this time. Mm. Lots of big names working alongside her. In this case, she plays the daughter of a drug lord. Okay. She then, as I mentioned earlier, has Too Fast, Too Furious, where she plays United States Customs Service agent working undercover for a notorious Argentine drug lord. The key thing to Too Fast, Too Furious, though, I think, is this is the one that really did give her that exposure. And there was certainly a lot of it around this film at the time. And obviously it grew into a much larger thing, so that shouldn't be any surprise to anyone. And it is a sizable role, like I said, not compared to the leads, but in terms of kind of where we've seen before and sadly after, she was at least very present and memorable in that film.
And if you're going to have to be a damsel in distress, I want to be a damsel on a boat where my romantic partner arrives on the boat in a car. You know, like, I understand the concept of the Fast and Furious series need cars to be a big thing, but a car to land on a boat to save Eva Mendes, you love to see it. Or certainly I did.
Yeah, no, I mean, I watched it probably 10 to 20 times, so I must have loved to see it too. So, yeah, Too Fast, Too Furious. 2004 now, she returns to music videos for The Strokes' The End Has No End. And then moving on to 2005, another big year, we see her star in the Will Smith-fronted rom-com Hitch, which, before we get into it, did see her become one of the first minority actresses to play a lead in a mainstream romantic comedy. Now, you were talking about this a wee bit when we caught up the other day. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us about that and tell us about Hitch?
Yes, so Hitch, the story follows Will Smith, Hitch, who is a matchmaker. And we find out very early on that A, he's good at his job, but B, this is all based on the fact that he was, snubbed when he was a kid by this girl that he fancied. So we see him like helping, you know, unappealing, let's say, or traditionally unattractive men. Heterosexual. Everyone is heterosexual in this film, I believe. I don't think there's even like a token gay character, is there? Is there a joke? I bet there's a joke at the expense of a lesbian couple or something. I don't know, but I can't remember that.
Yes, but not presently in the film. I don't believe any characters in this world are.
So we see him working with these traditionally unattractive men to get these traditionally incredibly attractive women. And by doing that, by ignoring them, treating them like shit, really. And then we meet Eva Mendes as Will Smith's character meets her. And he decides, you're the one for me. her character, the film then just follows him trying to pursue her quite aggressively while he's helping other people. Pursue women aggressively, and we'll get into like bits and pieces of that film and how it gives her a lot to do more than we've seen previously, but also maybe it's not doesn't work maybe as well as other rom-coms. But following what you're saying, yeah, the part was actually written for Cameron Diaz, which I think makes a lot of sense, but they did not want the producers didn't want to have an interracial couple because Will Smith was always the lead, he was always playing the titular role, so they couldn't have Cameron Diaz, but they didn't want to have a black woman alongside Will Smith because they thought it would alienate all the white people. So Ava was the name that they came up with, which is really shitty because the film would have been better off if they had tailored it to Eva Mendes. Eva Mendes deserves, you know, she could have been perfect in this sort of part as a, you know, as a really kind of a woman who doesn't care about men, does find Will Smith's character appealing and kind of leans into it. But instead, we just get this sort of a very sort of performed role from her and Will Smith. And there's no real connection. Like when they first meet and she's being chatted up by someone that she's trying to get rid of, and then Will Smith turns up, he's like, hey babe, I'm sorry I'm so late.
Sorry I'm late, honey, I couldn't get a cab. How was the meeting?
Oh, well, there was a beginning, a middle, and an end. Nice to meet you, Chip.
You too.
Now, on the one hand, it is very difficult for a man to even speak to someone who looks like you. But on the other hand, should that be your problem?
So life's kind of hard all around.
Well, not if you pay attention. I mean, you're sending all the right signals. No earrings, heels under 2 inches, your hair is pulled back, you're wearing reading glasses with no book, drinking a Grey Goose martini, which means you had a hell of a week and a beer just wouldn't do it. And if that wasn't clear enough, there's always the fuck off that you have stamped on your forehead. Because who's gonna believe that there's a man out there that could sit down beside a woman he doesn't know and genuinely be interested in who she is, what she does, without his own agenda?
Yeah, I wouldn't even know what that would look like. So what would a guy like that say?
Well, he'd say, my name is Alex Hitchens and I'm a consultant. But she wouldn't be interested in that because she'd probably be just counting the seconds until he left.
And she is intrigued. And you're like, I just don't buy this at this point. Like, I don't buy it already. I don't buy that this woman would be interested in this man. And it just continues. And there's just like, I think setup after setup, I just find it less and less believable or any sort of, I have no sort of relationship to what's going on, apart from having this yearning that it could have been good. Like going to Ellis Island, you know, Will Smith and Eva Mendes on a date is like, has so many ingredients of a really solid sequence about, you know, reflecting on American history and reflecting on, you know, their character's history and how they can connect and, you know, meaning, because they talk about how many different ways there are to kiss somebody and all the things that actually, as I've visited Ellis Island, is, I think is, a, you know, a beautiful place to reflect on love and family and connection. And but the film does none of that. Instead, it like really like hides away from any sort of potentially problematic conversations, and then just reveals that Eva Mendes had a pirate granddad, and she cries in the most unbelievable way.
Yeah.
And I just don't think the film ever finds its feet properly, and just avoids any sort of gray area. So. And it really, I think how everything is resolved really ticks me off, because those men deserve something bad to happen to them, you know, to get on their journey. Like nothing happens on their journey for them to earn their love and companionship of those wonderful women.
Yeah.
So I liked it.
You liar.
Five stars.
You little liar. Yes, I did see that in your Letterboxd. 5 stars. It said, can I add more stars? It's that good. And Letterboxd cut you down and said 5 stars.
Said no.
Hitch is a film that I remember people banging on about all the time when, around the time I guess it first came out. So what we're saying, it was 2005. Yeah, and then for years after, and I still think to this day, people treasure Hitch. So I watched it for the first time only a couple of years ago. I think I must have just been looking for some rom-com escapism during what was probably still COVID times. That seems to make sense as to why I went towards Hitch finally after all of this time. I was bamboozled that people like this film, let alone love this film or treasure it in any sort of way. I agree with everything you said, so I won't kind of recount those things. But it's interesting looking at what you're saying about Eva in this film and what it was meant to be, or who it was meant to be for, maybe more specifically, and then it coming to her, because it doesn't quite sync up. I think she's doing as good a job as she can, and she's absolutely grand in this film. And to her credit, I think she got fairly good, you know, reviews for her work in it. It wasn't like people said she wasn't any good in it. She was doing a charismatic turn as a lead, and that's quite important. All the posters are of him, but it is a co-led film, and she is a lead in this film, and she does a grand job. But it definitely feels set up for someone who is not her, and you can therefore feel in those moments like the Ellis Island one or other things that it's then written for someone with a sensibility that doesn't seem to align with what we are getting from Eve and what she's putting out as a performer. So it just doesn't seem to line up with her, but she's doing a good job. And for that, I'm glad to see her in a lead role in a massive, successful film. But talking about massive and successful, Will Smith, I know there's lots of things we can say about Will Smith at this point in time. but this was him at peak. And he's not good in this film. I really, truly think he's quite uncomfortable to watch. And I know the part is pretty disgusting, especially on reflection. And I think that's the larger part of it. But beyond that, I'm not getting the wildly charismatic lead I have seen from him in many other things. In this, I find him icky, and I find that he's also not giving as much as I've seen elsewhere. So there's many reasons. I just don't think this film works anyway.
I didn't mind him as much. I didn't think it was... I don't think he's naturally great at romantic comedies, is what I would say after watching Hitch. And I can't really think of many... Like, I think he is... Like, I've just recently watched Independence Day say... And you're like, wow, you are charismatic. And even bit where he's reflecting and, you know, we go back to him being young. So basically in his Fresh Prince days, like I used to think he was the most charming person. But you're right, Hitch, there's something that doesn't work. But I put it down to the romance bit because when he's being, you know, with the guys and he's talking about how to objectify women, then I think he's fine. It's the bits with women he is not great at, I would say. You're right. The way he approaches Eva Mendes in the bar, you're like... Get him away. Even like the whole kicking her accidentally. I'm just like, I just don't think any of this is charming. I don't know why this person is still going back to you. But I think it's the script as well. I think there's a few different reasons. If it had been Cameron Diaz, maybe we would have bought it more. Because, I don't know why it doesn't really click for me. But I do think, you know, back at the time when it was first released and, you know, if I was heterosexual, maybe this film would have a lot to give me. Because it is such a, do you know, like when there's these romantic comedies and the rules are so gendered and so traditional, like I know it sounds like I'm joking, but because of my worldview is so far removed from that and wanting to be far from that, to watch a movie that's like, kind of aggressively telling you these are gender norms, this is how women behave, this is how men get what they want, I don't find anything enjoyable in that. So that's why I do genuinely think if I was a heterosexual man, maybe I'd enjoy it more, and maybe I'd be taking notes.
Well, there we go. I mean, it all feels a little Andrew Tate light given the sort of current state of the world and men seeking out guidance on how to respond to women.
Yeah.
I don't think Hitch is quite nearly at all as poisonous as that man. However, it does have glimmers of uncomfortableness, that's to say the least. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Hitch, let's leave that there, shall we, and trot along a little further. So, same year, 2005, she also stars in The Wendell Baker Boys and Guilty Hearts. 2006 takes us to Trust the Man, where again, very starry cast. We see her with David Duchovny, Billy Crudup, Julianne Moore, and Maggie Gyllenhaal. But amongst those lovely bunch, finding herself again typecast in a fairly bland role, woman looking to cheat on her husband. I think some critics for some of the larger American press at the time calling her, you know, kind of vapid and sex crazed character. You know, it's just like, sounds about right again. Okay, why have we done this? Annoying. Anyway, changing up, 2007, she teams up with Nicolas Cage for Ghost Rider. Now, I did not watch Ghost Rider. I'm not sure if you did. I think you said you were maybe going to go there. Did you go there?
I went some of the way. It was a non-committal watch. And then I did skip ahead. So Ghost Rider's wild.
Sure.
A wild thing. I mean, people listening who know about it are going to laugh at how I'm going to describe it because it's the most basic way. But from Ava's point of view, her and Nicolas Cage have been in a relationship, and now he's like the stunt rider sort of person, and she's a journalist, and they reconnect.
How's your dad?
Johnny Blaze, thank you for talking to us before your big jump. No one has ever attempted such a distance before. 300 feet from field goal to field goal. What's going through your mind right now?
You look really good. I've seen you on TV. You know, I watch a lot of TV, and you do a really good job.
And again, another sort of... Well, I will say, because they seem to be playing on a level of, like, kind of superficiality it works. But anyway, the story continues, and she is in it more than I guess I would have thought for a film like that. And he turns into the Ghost Rider. But sadly, because I can only imagine in real life, Nicolas Cage was playing that part like a wild man. They have a lot of CGI over him. So, like, I'd much rather watch the film without the CGI, because okay, imagine Nicolas Cage going wild on a bike. So it is good. I mean, I didn't read if it was successful or anything. I think it just wasn't my sort of movie. And I...
What?
Life is short. Life is short.
Wow.
Okay. But I feel like I've watched 10 Ava Mendes movies in the last, like, 2 weeks. And I thought Ghost Rider, half is enough.
Okay,
do you know?
Fair enough.
It's like, but when you half buy a cake, enough. I don't want the whole cake. I just want a slither.
Yeah, a little bit. It's fine. A little tasty here, and then maybe I'll come back to it later.
Exactly.
Fair. Okay, cool. If any of you have seen Ghost Rider and have thoughts on the whole piece, you can let us know. But for now, we'll park that and we'll move on to 2007, where she stars in James Gray's We Own the Night. Mm. So again, maybe here is where we do start to see her working with some more auteur-type filmmakers. So James Gray, who's gone on to do lots of very interesting films like
Ad Astra.
Two Lovers, Ad Astra, The Lost
Immigrant.
City of Z, The Immigrant... lots of very interesting stuff. So this should feel like a very exciting moment. But We Own the Night, I guess, came fairly early in the James Gray canon. I've not actually seen it. Have you seen We Own the Night?
I did, yeah. I saw it when it came out. It's another cop, you know, very male-dominated film. Yeah. I couldn't tell you what Ava Mendes is, but I assume she's a girlfriend or something along those lines.
Oh, well... Michael, let me tell you. So she is not the girlfriend of a cop this time. She's the girlfriend of a brother of a cop. So it's a real...
Well, that's a stretch.
Shift. Yeah, big stretch for her. So it felt like it could have been an exciting time, but I'm not sure that's offering too much. Anyway, there she was, We Own the Night. So 2007 as well, we also have films like Live or Live. Live or Live? Live, because it's got an exclamation mark. Live! And I believe that has her at the in a lead role again at the centre of a mockumentary-type film where something terrible's going to happen live on air. Something to that effect. It might be a great film and we missed it, so
yeah,
I wish I knew more about it.
That sounds interesting.
Well, maybe we'll Ava Mendes Part 2 live.
Yeah.
And also that year we have Cleaner and an uncredited cameo in Knocked Up. But this is where things get really exciting. So in 2008, we're getting to return to this film, which we have spoken about in the Annette Bening episode,
You're
interested and want to go back and get even more of it. So we have the remake of The Women. So what a movie, what a time. I don't think there are as many films as good as The Women.
What, from the 1930, I don't know, is it 38 film? Is a brilliant film. But yes, Diane English, who was, you know, most celebrated for Murphy Brown, reimagined The Women for a 2008 audience with hardly any of the same, well, none of the same impact as the original, but... it just doesn't work, and it doesn't work for loads of reasons. Because it's a film that I think on paper could be really, really good. You know,
yeah.
You have Meg Ryan, you have Annette Bening. Then now I doubt myself because Deborah Messing's also there.
Oh, stop it! Scarf.
No, Deborah Messing is so bad in this film. Anyway, sorry, but you have those two characters, and then Meg Ryan's husband's having an affair with Ava Mendes' character, who is a spritzer girl in a department store. Annette Bening finds out through her manicurist. Meg Ryan finds out. Then they share it with each other, and they're trying, unlike the first film or the original film, they're, you know, Meg Ryan's trying to find her feet as an empowered woman who doesn't need a man. And this is where, like, the film could have really worked, but it doesn't. There's so many reasons it doesn't work. From Deborah Messing being a heavily pregnant woman, to Jada Pinkett Smith being a really, what's the word for someone who's like a predatory lesbian? Like she is wanting to have sex with everybody. And it just, there's so many reasons, I guess, it doesn't really work. And the update really messes up with Ava Mendez's part, because in the original, it is really focused on keeping the husband. Like, that's the main thing. So Joan Crawford's version is the same. She's a spritzer girl in a department store, but she loses. Like, she's part of the trajectory. Whereas here, Ava Mendez is kind of written out. So you do have fun interactions with Annette Bening where they're trying to, like, you know, one up each other and say, he's my man, whatever. And then again with Meg Ryan, where Meg Ryan, some of the dialogue is really not aged well, I would say. And it is taken from the 30s film, but there's a lot of like, you wouldn't get this, but let me tell you this in simple terms, even you understand. And yeah, that really playing Ava's character as a stupid woman. And then we don't see her again, apart from, you know, she hears that because Meg Ryan now has her own fashion line, the husband wants to be back with her. And then in the end credits, we get, let me pull it up because I hadn't noticed this until I was rewatching it there. There is a tabloid news paper, like a headline with a picture of her holding a woman's hand. And the headline is Haynes Hussey, which is Ava Mendez's character, gets a girlfriend, exclamation mark. So like, it's like, what? So you've written her out and you've just, you know, like, is she like so wild or something that she would even get with a woman? Like, I don't understand the implications of that. She would be a lesbian or bisexual, or I just don't get it. So the film doesn't really work. And it's such a shame because I do think it could have worked really well. I will say, a really good delivery on Ava Mendez's part, where there she's with Meg Ryan in the changing room, and Meg Ryan, and they're wearing lingerie, both of them, and Meg Ryan says to Ava Mendez,
"Listen, let me give you a little bit of a tip. Stephen would never like anything that trashy."
"Oh, Stephen doesn't like anything I'm wearing. I take it off."
And that's directly from the original film. But it's like, yes, okay. I would love to see you in the proper Joan Crawford role. Because then at the end, she'd get to say the amazing line of, like, I've never seen a group of people like this outside of a kennel. Insinuating that they're all bitches. And do you know, like, and we don't get any of that. So yeah, it is a shame. I'm assuming you didn't rewatch it for this podcast.
I didn't rewatch on this occasion, but yes, I do think a missed opportunity. I will say there is still something enjoyable about watching the women, but it does just seem to miss. One thing I do detest, though, is that they are just a detestable awards branch anyway, but the Razzies did give her a nomination for Best Actress for this, and this is boring. Actress. I mean, Worst Actress. Did I say Best Actress?
Worst Actress. Yeah, I was going to say, what? What worst sort of cruel actress. Joke?
Yeah, we're nominating you for Best Actress, but it's the Razzies. No, Worst Actress. And I feel like that's just, it just shows what, like, they don't like a character, so we're going to nominate someone for, it's just like, fuck off, you're so boring.
Mm. And she is playing the same part again, she's the other woman, she is,
yes,
and she's also, you know, a stereotype of, like, oh my gosh, she's so sexy, and so this, and, which even the Joan Crawford didn't lean in so heavily into that, but yeah, Ava Mendez really going full hog, like, I'm so sexy, I'm sex on legs, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's maybe an unfortunate step, but there it lies, the women. Anywho, so what else was going on in 2008? We also see her starring as a film? God, my words are really not working today.
As a femme.
A femme fatale character in Frank Miller's The Spirit. Then in 2009, she's returning to a big, exciting auteur name with Werner Herzog in Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. So this teams her again with Nick Cage. This time she's playing a prostitute.
Sex worker.
But again, sex worker, excuse me. And his love interest again. So another trend. And this film, very divisive. It's an unusual one. But it did get a huge amount of acclaim at the time. It ended up being on a lot of end-of-year lists. A lot of people spoke about it as one of the most exciting, inventive, interesting films of the year. I hadn't seen it before. I was certainly very interested to go and see it. It is the tale of a corrupt cop again. So here we are back in the world of corrupt cops, played by Nick Cage. And it's a bit of a confusing one. So there had been a film made in, I think, 1992 called Bad Lieutenant. By, what's the name of the director?
I don't think
should
I know.
Have probably taken a note of that.
Let me Google.
Anyway, yes. So this, and it's called Bad Lieutenant, by the way, and there's a lot of similarities, corrupt cop, all of this, but apparently they weren't linked at all. This wasn't a reboot, it wasn't a remake, it was nothing like that, according to Werner Herzog. It was its own thing. Abel Ferrara, I've remembered his name now. And there was then a lot of bad blood there, especially going Abel's way towards Werner, thinking that this was a massive ripoff and why would you even do this? It's like terrible. Apparently, they've made amends since. It is incredibly confusing to me that they wouldn't be linked at all. I think someone's telling a bit of a fib here. But anyway, we got Bad Lieutenant. This is a very interesting film, though. It's set in post-Katrina New Orleans. We have Nick Cage as a corrupt cop kind of seeking out any personal misdemeanors he can on his way. And alongside that, we find him trying to get to the bottom of a case where we see that five Senegalese people have, is it gone missing or have they been murdered?
I think they're... I think they're missing at the start, are they? And then I haven't seen it since we did the Jennifer Coolidge episode, but they've gone missing, and then he realizes they're dead or something, or maybe
I think that is what it is. And along the way, we see him encounter very
sordid
sorts of people. And we have Ava coming in as a sort of love interest, getting involved in his problematic world and enabling him in certain moments, but also kind of facilitating him to take down equally problematic people. It's a film full of contrast. It's unusual. There are visual moments in there which are strange and unexpected, which adds to it. It's a film that at the time critics even thought was like a prank, like someone's trying to take the piss here, but it's an interesting prank, if anything. But even still, watched on its own, it is just an unusual film. I'm glad I've seen it. Jennifer Coolidge, I hadn't seen it when we did that.
She's amazing,
seen it now. She is terrific in it. Jennifer Coolidge playing Nick Cage's stepmother and Ava Mendes playing his love interest. What a world to be in. So one I would recommend to people for some absurdity. It's a quite a wild one, but I'm glad I've seen it. And even though, again, she's sort of playing a type, it's at least more interesting and more jagged and has more surprises, let's say, than she's getting elsewhere in this genre that she finds herself in.
Yes, way more interesting than most of the films that have come before, probably.
Yeah, for sure. Then, if we move on to 2010 now, we see Mendes teaming up with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg once more in Adam McKay's The Other Guys. Now, The Other Guys tells the story of the other guys in a police precinct. What do we call it? You know, there's the cops who go out and get all the glory and do all the things, and we see them at start, played by Samuel L. Jackson and Dwayne The Rock Johnson, in a fairly early film role for him. And then there are the other guys, the ones who work in the office, pushing the pens, doing all the admin, and might occasionally get the opportunity to go and do something. So we see Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell as these characters. Case comes up, they pursue it, putting them on the road to being the glorified cops they want to be. So Mark Wahlberg, a little cooler, sexier individual, but still pretty dopey. Will Ferrell, very straight-laced, by the books sort. So therefore, massive surprise, pun for the film, that when Mark Wahlberg comes around to Will Ferrell's house for dinner, he meets his wife, played by the surprisingly, to him, incredibly beautiful Eva Mendes.
I'm sorry I've been hiding, honey, but this dinner was tricky.
Oof. Who are you?
I'm Dr. Sheila Gamble, his wife.
Come on, seriously, who is that?
His old lady.
Sweetie, it's a workstation.
Got it.
And you come in here dressed like a hobo, it's distracting.
I know you're working. I'm so sorry.
Come on, seriously. Come on, what? Who is that? It's the old, it's the old ball and chain.
Get over here.
Not right now.
Okay.
Look, they're not all first round picks, okay? Come on, are you going to tell me who that is?
I guess it's quite amusing, but when you're watching all of Eva Mendes' films together, it becomes a bit like, oh, why are we here? Why is this going on?
It's like when, you know, if like in a scenario where there's like a party and somebody makes a joke that the other person's uncomfortable with and everyone just keeps making the joke and you're... I mean, it's not my sort of movie anyway. And I think casting Eva Mendes to be the butt of a joke... For A, someone that's too beautiful to be with someone like Will Ferrell, and then also to be told that she's not attractive by Will Ferrell. It's like, is that how fragile your ego is? Like, of all you men involved, that you cast this person who deserves much more than you guys have, and you just put her down, and you have cameras rolling, and it's to joke for a mainstream audience that are probably going to be kind of... whoever the sort of people would be to watch that sort of movie in the cinema. So I did not appreciate it for in a very basic level of, you know, like, cop on, like, you fucking idiots. You know, like, what are you doing? Like, what age are you?
Yeah.
If you saw a little boy in the playground tell a little girl she was ugly and then laugh at her, you'd think that was bullying. But when Judd Apatow and Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg do it, it's comedy. You know, I don't get it. That Eva Mendes she has agency and agreed to do it, sorry. So I'm just being woke and whatever, I guess. But
yeah.
I don't want to watch it.
No, fair enough. What I will say, if we are to give it some credit, or for her in particular, that it does allow her to do something, at least play differently into it. She can lean into the comedic side, being sort of this blind to it person. So it is funny, and it does show that she can be a really funny performer. But other than that, at the time when it came out, it was like, oh yeah, sure, this is fine. But it was in that wave of these Judd Apatow type comedies with who I realized I kept saying Will Ferrell, like I'm saying Emerald Fennell, but it's Will Ferrell.
Oh, well, I don't know how you say his name, but yeah.
Ferrell. Will Ferrell. But these films, which were, you know, plentiful at that point in time. This one I don't even remember being worried by at the time, and rewatching it, I think I felt similarly to you. It's a bit like, okay, yes, rather not, thank you, goodbye. But speaking of things then were getting more interesting, this kind of sees a nice run of a few years of interesting work for sure. So 2010, we see her play the co-worker and love interest of a married man, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, in Massey Tajeden's romantic comedy Last Night. And in this, she would star alongside Keira Knightley and Sam Worthington. Now, I have taken a wee note of something she had said in this, and then I'll hand over to you because I've not watched this one. But she had said that she was initially reluctant to star in this one, worrying that the character would lack originality and was too seductive. And it is no wonder that she is concerned about these things. She's recognizing the role she's been put in again and again, and both of those ring very true. Lacking originality, too seductive. However, she agreed to play this role after meeting with the director and said it was particularly great to connect with a female director and talk about this woman and not objectify her as the other woman, but give her a real, true life and make her honest. And she says, thank God she did. So, last night, Michael, tell us about it. What do you make of it?
So I don't know where you got romantic comedy, but it's like closer. Like it's a drama, I would say. Because I thought maybe that's how they were trying to market it. It's a film that is suggesting it has a lot more to say than it does about relationships and being committed. And again, I found myself a little bit alienated because of like these conversations, these thoughts, I don't really understand. For a few different reasons, but Keira Knightley just sees Eva Mendes like, why did you not tell me that you're working with this person? And then Keira Knightley's off with what is the name? The fourth lead in it is Marion Cotillard's husband, who's a really celebrated director, filmmaker, actor, William Kenet or something. Is that Kenet?
Yes, I believe you're right.
I'd be sleeping with him. And I'm sure my partner would not mind. And I'd be sleeping with Eva Mendes. I think this is the problem I have a little bit, like, what is the stakes here? Like, I don't understand. But that's a very sort of, you know, 90s, early noughties fear. And perhaps it is a fear for a lot of people. Like, the worst thing that somebody could do is like, cheat with Eva Mendes. Whereas, I trust people, and I also, like, if you're in a relationship where you're open, then just let them, or if it's something somebody wants, you talk through it. You don't, like, aggressively attack your partner. But yeah, it's that movie. And, you know, I think it's wonderful Ava feels that way about the film and her part. It is definitely not as simple as, like, she's the other woman, but it's also, it's not ever going to be one of the best parts ever. So it's fine. I if you really, really, really like Closer, Last Night is like a few tiers down, but similar sort of vibe.
Okay. Cool. Well, there we go. Last Night. And the name we were looking for was Guillaume Canet.
Absolutely wonderful man. And it is, what I'd love is if the film reflected more on, like, he's the other man, and, like, the connection between his being, like, male and, like, that sort of gendered roles in heterosexual relationships. But the film doesn't go anywhere near that. Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, would you recommend I watch it?
Do you like Closer?
I do like Closer.
Well, then, if you like Keira Knightley, you like Closer, why not? What's holding you back?
It's still not a committed response, but I'll think about it, so thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on then, shall we? So 2011, we see her cameo in Fast 5, but it's just a brief cameo reprising her role from Too Fast, Too Furious. 2012, we get another lead in Girl in Progress, where she plays a single mother raising a 14-year-old daughter, which earned her an ALMA Award nomination for Favourite Movie Actress, the ALMA Awards being there to celebrate Latin performers on screen, mm-hmm. Latin American performers on screen.
And just to flag, because it's an all right movie, you know, like, it's a sweet, you know, one of those low budget trying to like get at your heartstrings, but it's not that good, and there's a few different things of why it doesn't really work, but she's really solid in it. But her daughter, played by Sierra Alexa Ramirez, who did win Best Supporting Actress at those same awards, is terrific, and is someone who I'm really surprised you've not seen more of. And yeah, Patricia Arquette's in it too. It's an interesting film, and with a bit more development it could have maybe been really good.
So help me, I will set you on fire, girl.
Please do.
Why? Why now?
Why now what?
Why now are you being so impossible?
I'm a teen named Anxiety.
How many times do we have to go through this? That was my grandmother's name. That's a beautiful name. That woman was a saint.
Okay, cool. Mm. Well, that sounds like a good tip. All right, Girl in Progress.
I would recommend that over Last Night.
Fair. Okay, good. And that sounds like a good call out then. So let's but that's go not for to that say it's good. Well, fine, but if we're just picking and choosing.
Exactly. If you have to pick between those two.
Okay, but maybe you don't have to pick between those two because here comes some interesting stuff in case you've missed it. Let's cover them. So 2012 as well, though perhaps the wildest film on this list, and we have covered some peculiarities already. And I'm sure this would be the wildest film on many best of lists or any film lists ever. We have Leo Carax's Holy Motors, where she is playing KM, a supermodel. Now, very interestingly, and I did not know this the first times that I had watched this film, that this part was originally written for Kate Moss. And that, I'm like, okay, then Eva Mendes, cool, loving that you were to do this. It's a very, well, it's not a very brief segment. It is a film made up of segments. It is, we have spoken about it on our Kylie Minogue episode, but this film is about a man who takes up a series of peculiar appointments whilst being driven around town in a limo. And each one involves a change of character, basically. Wild costume things go on in the limo, and he basically enters what feels like a new world in each segment. And this one is a bit of a Beauty and the Beast tale. We have Eva Mendes as a gorgeous supermodel in the middle of a fashion shoot, and a sort of one-eyed, bedraggled man in a kind of fantastic green suit maneuvers himself towards the shoot, which seems to be happening in a cemetery, enters the shot. The photographer seems very into it because he's going to get his Beauty and the Beast, his La Belle et la Bête moment. And what happens is the character played fabulously in all of its forms by Denis Levant carries Eva Mendes off on his shoulder and takes her back to a cave, where we then see her donned with a, would you call it a burqa? Is that the correct terminology?
Yeah, I
believe so.
A
body covering, oh, if I'm not using the right word.
I don't know what the intention is there. I mean, yeah, I haven't really thought much of it, but he certainly does dress her a certain way and strips himself and has flowers and petals and... Because I was going to say dialogue-less piece, but she doesn't speak, does she?
She doesn't say anything, no. Some other characters say a very few words, but she certainly doesn't speak. And then it's kind of like, okay, is that why it was written for Kate Moss? No slight on Kate, she's fabulous and great at what she does. But in this, though, Eva Mendes does bring a lot. What do you make of this interesting segment?
I just love Holy Motors. I just think it's fascinating. And I think standing alone, like each of those sections, maybe some would be really great as a short film or you could, you know, get something out of. This probably less so, but as part of the whole, I absolutely love it. And I agree. She's bringing something of like, she is complicit in what's happening too. Like, I don't know what we don't know who organized her coming or not, but it wouldn't surprise me if she organized it for herself.
Yeah.
Do you know? No. And because she certainly seems to be happy to be going down and to be almost like saved, but then she's also not struggling in the, you know, like say the upstairs where before she's brought down to the sewers. I really like it, but that is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, of course. It is a one of a kind. And yeah, the segment really stands out, but I think it was always used in a lot of the sort of promo imagery was him in this outfit. And I can't believe I said a cave. The sewers is where they do descend down into.
But it's cavely.
Fitting. It does feel cavely. Yes, it's fabulous. And she even then said it's brief. She doesn't get to speak, but she thinks certainly at that point in time was the coolest, most creative thing that she'd ever done. And I guess working in a film like that, it makes sense. It's certainly part of quite the project.
Yeah, I would say it's my favourite film that she's been in.
Fair, yeah. Me too, yes, for sure. 2012 as well, though, big year for her. She stars in Derek St. Francis' The Place Beyond the Pines. And here we have her as the former girlfriend... sometimes recurring love interest of motorcycle stuntman turned bank robber, played by her now partner Ryan Gosling.
Hey.
Do you remember my name?
Romina. I like to call you Ro. What are you doing now? You got plans?
I gotta go home.
Let me give you a ride.
Now, The Place Beyond the Pines is a film of three acts. We see that initial act, the motorcycle stuntman turned bank robber encountering this woman, unknown to him until a little while later, has had a child with this woman. She's raising this child. We see him move away from the stunt stuff into the bank robber stuff. That becomes a big chunk of the film. And then we move forward in time, and then we have a police officer played by Bradley Cooper in an altercation with Ryan Gosling's character. And the outcome of that moment and how that changes the lives of everyone involved and impacts Bradley Cooper's character, and therefore how he is choosing to navigate that point in time, becomes the sort of main focus of part two. And then part three, we move into the future and we have Dane DeHaan playing the teenaged version of the child of Ava and Ryan's characters, and encountering the son of who was once this police officer at a different point in his life. So, episodic, it's a film that when it came out, I was bowled over by it. I loved it a lot and found it incredibly memorable. I still think it's really great, but on rewatch, I understand that there's just so much loaded into it, particularly that first segment, the first of the three segments. And from the off, it's hypnotic. It looks amazing. It feels amazing. The atmosphere is rich. Ryan Gosling is looking as sexy as ever and therefore as charismatic as he has ever been on screen. And we have a gorgeous Eva Mendes. Ben Mendelsohn is also wonderful in this part, yeah. And how he connects into that world and moves towards, you know, from the stunt life to the robbery situation. And there's just so much going on, and it feels exciting and beautiful to look at. It's super memorable. Watching it this time, I realized it does taper out over the next kind of two segments. Even though I still think it's really good, it loses that momentum and excitement that it builds in that first segment. I will say, though, that Eva Mendes, for me, is the best she's ever been on screen in this film. She is bringing so much warmth and heart to a part that otherwise, and I know you said this at the top of the episode, but otherwise could have been absent. And here it's not. She is so there, so sex in the beginning, but so warm, so motherly. You want to be around her. It's terrific. I wish she had more to do, but what she does get to do, she's absolutely nailing it.
Yeah, and I think you're totally right. And I'm obsessed with that first part of the film. Like, I think that's as good as any movie in the last few years. But yeah, the other two parts then I'm less interested in, but still good. But Eva Mendes, who's in the film throughout, like, she reminds me of Kay, the Diane Keaton part in The Godfather, in that I don't think it makes sense for those parts to be bigger, but those parts are so significant in how they punctuate the film and the story that they're, like, perfectly placed, and the performance works so well because you understand everything that's happening more because this character is there to reflect the truly sort of, like, sometimes romantic, sometimes horrific, but the very, like, high stakes nature of what's happening. So yeah, I think she's wonderful in it. Yeah, and I would agree, I think that's as good as she's ever been on screen, which would, you know, really excite me for, you know, future work that she could do. And I guess this is the same as Holy Motors, but because she doesn't have much dialogue sometimes, it's just, like, look in her eyes that she's communicating, you know. I think it's wonderful because she isn't given that much time to have such a developed character, but we feel her in such a strong way. Like, there's, you know, we don't really know the ins and outs of why she didn't communicate with Ryan Gosling about being pregnant. We don't really know about her current relationship and how that fits into everything and how she feels about that. Like, we're not, none of this is articulated in huge ways, but we know it because of how it's been performed. Yeah, so I would agree, she's wonderful in it.
Yeah, it's definitely a film I would recommend if you haven't seen it. I think it's a film that, although was certainly noticed at the time, I think it did slide under the radar a fair bit considering who was in it and that it came at a point in Derek C. and France's career post Blue Valentine where, you know, it was a very exciting filmmaker to be paying attention to. And hopefully we do continue to see exciting stuff from him because he's certainly capable of really great work and I would love more of that. But yeah, it was great to rewatch this movie and it is the one that in my head is like, when given the right material or given the opportunity, even sadly as small as it may have been in terms of screen time, she can bring so much and therefore we need more from her. So it's a really important one in her film career.
Yeah, and personal life because she met Ryan Gosling.
Absolutely, and therefore would drive the change that then came after, you know, two kids down the line, still going strong, certainly at this point, 10 years later, mm-hmm. at least, I guess, from when they would have met on that film. So, yes, a massive moment for her. 2013, then, we have Mendes appear in the HBO comedy Clear History. And in 2014, speaking of that man, Ryan Gosling, she stars in his directorial debut, Lost River, playing a cabaret show performer. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I've not seen Lost River. Michael, you did check it out. An unusual one, I think, to describe, but...
It's a visual film, which is a polite way to say story's not that important. And I enjoyed it really, or more than I thought, because I feel like it had a bad reception, or maybe not as good reception as people were hoping for. Ava's part really is that so this starts with Christian Hendricks, who is bankrupt and needs to find a job. So Ben Mendelsohn, in another great part, tells her to go and to the club. Enter Ava Mendes as, you know, this, I feel like, I mean, it's not exactly Liza Minnelli, but the sort of, like, this is the sort of thing they're going for, this sort of like really charismatic, you know, she's running the show. And I'm not convinced, and this happens with lots of parts of the film, I'm not convinced Ava Mendes was the right fit maybe for that part, but it's an entertaining film and it was nice to see her do something slightly different.
Great. Cool. Okay. And it's a film which is reception was, I think, a bit up and down at the time, but it sounds like an intriguing one. So
yeah, like maybe if Ryan Gosling wasn't behind it, we'd never be talking about it probably.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Got you. And then I guess sadly for us, but not necessarily for her, this then was the last acting role that we saw Ava take on until 2021, where she voiced the role of a yoga instructor in an episode of the now incredibly successful children's animated series Bluey, about the blue dog. But let's kind of look besides that. What else has been going on? Mendes has a line of bed linens and dinnerware that is sold in many department stores, I think, namely Macy's. She's kind of done a few bits and pieces. She partnered with New York & Co. to launch a fashion line, which is Ava by Ava Mendes. Also the creative director of the makeup brand Circa Beauty, which I think is also an American pharmaceutical exclusive, I think, to Walgreens. That happened in 2015. But yes, mainly she's been focused on being a mother over the past decade. She has two children, born in 2014 and 2016. But she hasn't closed the door on acting. It is just that she does not intend to return just for anything, like we said earlier, because she acknowledges the typecasting and what has happened before and not necessarily wanting to just continue that for the sake of it. She says she never quit acting, and she wrote this on Instagram, I believe, last year. She just wanted to be at home with her babies, and unfortunately, or fortunately, I should say, her other business ventures allowed her to do that more than acting would. She was unimpressed with the stereotypical roles she was being offered at the time following Lost River, but cites that as a dream project. I mean, she might be a little biased, but fair enough. She felt that that film was then a tough act to follow. Then also last year, 2022, also she starred on American Chat Show The View, saying that I have such a short list of what I will do. Like, before kids, I kind of was up for anything. I mean, if it was a fun project, she would do it. But now, I won't do violence. I won't do sexuality. Basically, she knows what she doesn't want to be doing on screen, and she wants to do something exciting again. And I don't blame her. She's worked with interesting directors. There could be room for interesting work, and why not? Beyond that, she's also been working in charity a lot recently. She's been over in Australia working with McDonald's, of all people, as the McHappy Day ambassador. I think that's a big thing in Oz that I'd never heard about before. And that works with the Ronald McDonald House, which I think homes families who have loved ones who are in care and struggling. So has been doing a lot of work with them. So she's been busy all the same, just not on film.
She, do you know my favourite thing she's been doing? She also stars in adverts for her perfume, and she records music. she literally records music and has a music video to go alongside it. So she has, you know, she could be doing a disco album any moment now.
Wow.
I'm going to play you a little bit, because you haven't lived until you've heard Ava Mendes' Windmills of Your Mind.
Round like a circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning on an ever spinning wheel, like a snowball down a mountain or a carnival balloon, like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon.
That I could understand her being in a Greatest Showman type musical. However, whoever set up that arrangement, or if it is just a misunderstanding of how the song should flow, it's quite confusing. So if I was to hear this in a perfume advert, I would be a little baffled. That's how I would describe it.
But you'd buy 5 bottles, right?
Oh my god, I'd buy 10.
Well, that, because I don't think Catherine Zeta-Jones has perfume, but I couldn't be buying Ava Mendes's duvet set when I already have. I've a whole wardrobe full of Catherine Zeta-Jones.
yeah, I know, exactly. You've got to choose one or the other, because how can you commit otherwise? If you're not committed to Casa, then what are you doing with your life?
Yeah, well, exactly. The Casa Army, Casa Zeta-Jones Army.
And what an army we are, you and me.
Exactly, just the two of us. So speaking of, you know, thinking of what projects would lure Ava back to the big screen, what have you got for us, Scott?
This was a fun thing to think about, and it came of thinking about if she thinks that working with, like, Leo Carax was one of the most exciting creative moments of her career. It makes me think that's the kind of work that she wants, not a scene, as it was in that case, something a bit more fleshed out. So I'm thinking a director with a very artistic eye, who somebody works very well with actresses in particular. And the first thing that came to my head was Pablo Larraín. Now, then, as I was thinking about it, I was like, this feels too obvious, and I'm not sure where it slots in if I think about him making Jackie or Spencer, based on Lady Di with Kristen Stewart. But anyway, I was like, that is intriguing to me, but then another name excited me more. So I thought of Kristen Stewart, and then I thought of her work with Olivier Assayas. And in particular, I mean, Personal Shopper is a wonderful film, but I'm thinking of the clouds of Sils Maria and what her Juliet and Osh are doing in that film, and quite specifically the feeling of that film and the space it gives them to be very present with each other and bounce off of one another and build so much character complexity and intrigue within a relationship and a place within a career in so many things. I'm obsessed with that film. Yeah. I reckon she would be wonderful in that sort of world. So if he wanted to kind of retread that kind of filmmaking, and he's got lots of wonderful and interesting films, but I do think they could work very well together because he gets great things out of performers. So that's where I'm going.
That's amazing. Well, it's funny. I was combining two things. So totally of what you're saying about directors, or a director that I think she would really want to work with and would bring out something amazing out of her, because he brings out amazing things out of actors. But I'm also obsessed with the idea the women could be done again. Okay. So he keeps avoiding doing an English language film, but Pedro Almodovar doing The Women. Now, that would be such a dream. I I would want Eva Mendes to play one of the friends. So there's like four friends, and I want her to play one of them. We're still going to have Annette Bening. Like, there's no way that we're not having Annette in there. And also get Meg Ryan back in. And I would, as the Spritzer girl, have Aubrey Plaza. I think that would be such a fun...
Great! Oh, good.
And yeah, like, yeah, the central concept of, you know, the affair and all, can be the catalyst, but then it spirals into all the wonderful things that are possible in that story and in that world. I should say, another name that did come up in my mind as a director, in case Pedro backed off again, is Mike White. Mike White would do a really great job of that.
Yeah, absolutely sold. We've seen it with The White Lotus. Go on. Perfect.
And you could have Jennifer Coolidge in it as some fun person. She could own the department store or something, I don't know.
We could have Jennifer Coolidge in many of the roles in that film.
Or she's just the women with Jennifer Coolidge playing all the parts, bar the one Eva Mendes plays.
Eva Mendes.
And Aubrey Plaza. Actually, we could just get Eva Mendes with, like, alumni from The White Lotus. Actually, just get Eva Mendes in The White Lotus season 3. Would be great. She'd fit so well.
That is absolutely perfect, actually. Yeah. We found our way around to another perfect suggestion. And one that doesn't feel unlikely. Maybe the lure is actually going to be television, but quality television at its peak.
She could fit in so many shows. But yes, I do feel hopeful. I feel like she's going to have a... I was going to try and put Renaissance and Eva or Mendes in a fun way, but
Mendesons?
Yeah, that's really good. That sounds fun. Okay, so we're going to have that, and she'll be an Oscar winner before Ryan Gosling.
Here's hoping.
No, well, I love Ryan Gosling too. They might be my favorite, like, Hollywood couple. He says, I need to think about that. That might be an absolute lie.
Favorite in many ways for sure.
What do you mean? I don't know what you mean with your eyes there, but they just seem so lovely and fun. Like Warren Beatty, I don't think I could. I love Annette Bening, but Warren Beatty, I'm not sure I want to be. And the same with Zeta Jones and Douglas. I'm not sure Michael Douglas wants me around.
It's always, there's always one side of that pairing we're far more interested in spending time with than the other. But in this case, gladly hang out with Ava and Ryan.
Anytime. Just, invite us. Invite us over.
Please. Come on.
Thank you so much for finally getting your way and encouraging us to do Eva Mendes.
Finally.
Where can people find us if they want to tell us that they absolutely love Hitch and we have no taste in films? Where can people tell us that?
Okay. Well, if people want to tell us that, I'm afraid you can't, because we are unavailable everywhere. But if you want to tell us something like we're beautiful and we're amazing and you also just love Eva Mendes, you can do that. And you can do that on Twitter/X or Instagram at don'tknowher_pod. Or if you fancy dropping us an email, you can do that at don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
Yes, and please do rate and review us. That helps people find us. And yeah, we're so grateful that you have joined us for this, what feels like a very special episode. Because it feels like Ava's always been like in the back of my mind since I said no to you and her, like years ago,
so
what, 2 years ago? Yeah.
So many
but
times.
Here we are. We've done that. We're never going to have to watch Hitch again. And it's all good.
Thank God. If there's one good thing to come from this, it's that I can put a full stop on that story.
Yeah. Until we do the Will Smith episode. Anyway, on that note, thank you so much, Scott. And I hope you have a lovely rest of your day.
I hope you do as well. Thank you. And bye, everyone.
Bye.